This is Haunted America with your host, Josh Mantello and Al Shepard on Blog Talk Radio. To discuss today's topics, call 646-716-5896. And now, Haunted America with Josh Mantello and Al Shepard.
Hello, everyone. And thank you for joining me. My name's Al Shepard, and I am here all alone tonight. I hope you can hear me all right. Usually, Josh and I let us know if... We have any audio problems, but he had to work tonight, so it's going to be just you guys and me. So if you're not hearing anything, please let me know. If you are hearing me, please let me know. I'm watching the chat room here. So been a heck of a day. Computer crashed on me. Had to totally reinstall Windows Vista and every program that I've got here. So it's been a busy day here. Got a great guest coming up tonight, Dustin Perry from Ghost Hunters International, and I know you all know who he is, so he'll be coming in just a little bit later. So we have to figure out what we're going to talk about until he gets here. Usually Josh and I bounce off each other, so I had to, at the last minute, come up with some stuff here, and I'm glad you can all hear me. Great. One thing I wanted to start with is a few people asked me about the theme song that we play, and it was actually I stumbled across this song just scouring the internet, and I stopped and I listened to it, and I thought it was pretty cool. Mainly because the lead singer of the song was about 5 years old. So if you bear with me for a minute here, I'm going to play the original song to this by the DVDs, just so you can hear the little star here.
The door.
The man with the ball.
He scares me more.
Oh.
Let's go towards it and just see what we're dealing with. Oh, wait a second. Where is this?
It's blowing out.
It's just air. It's not even heat or anything.
Oh, oh.
Oh, it smells.
I know. Oh, I know what it is.
What?
Someone's in the bathroom and they put the thing on. The vent. And that's the poo smell. What?
We just inhaled someone's poo smell right out of the
All right. As you can tell, we're just kind of goofing around here right at the moment. We've got a great guest, Dustin Perry, coming in about 20 minutes. So we just got to kill a little time. That first song was the song I chose as the theme song to the show. When I heard it, I just said, yeah, that's kind of a cool song. So we just got to have that for the theme song here. Little bit of news I grabbed off here I wanted to share with you. Back, I think it was episode 3, we had Michael Baker on here from New Gravity Media. And there's an article here I found on the tail of their highly successful and award-winning paranormal documentary, 14 Degrees, New Gravity Media has officially announced their recent collaboration with nationally acclaimed demonologist John Zaffis to produce their latest and forthcoming film, Museum of the Paranormal. Scheduled for a spring 2010 release, Museum of the Paranormal will serve to tell the mysterious and haunting history surrounding several featured artifacts in Zaffis' legendary Connecticut Museum. The film's featured items range from a poltergeist-ravaged stuffed teddy bear to a very unsettling ventriloquist dummy named Simon, known for his independent conversations with a frightened young child. The museum, which contains well over 1,000 artifacts, began primarily as part of the paranormal research and assistance effort conducted by John Zaffis over the past 35 years. Most of the items in the museum were at one time directly related to or the focus of a haunting or paranormal research case, and the items' previous owners would very often request that these items be removed from their property in the hopes of preventing a further outbreak of activity. John Zaffis explains, the museum started off as a very bizarre type of thing, actually. I always had this thing where I used to collect various items from a case, and over the years I would just pile them up in boxes in the barn behind the house. Well, a few years back I said I need to make a decision on what I'm going to do with all these things, and I said I want to do a paranormal museum. But I wanted to do something different. I wanted to integrate different belief systems, religions, and cultures. I think it's important to tell those stories, but also incorporate them so people can understand these things, that there isn't just one culture, one belief system that these things occur. It's worldwide, and it happens to everybody, and it has for thousands and thousands of years. Museum of the Paranormal, which is slated to be shot at several key locations throughout New England, will be hosted by Zaffis himself and will feature the same collaborative efforts of the successful filmmaking trio Anthony Z. Monti, Joanne L. Jaritos, and Michael J. Baker that were responsible for the award-winning production and widespread acclaim of 14 Degrees, a paranormal documentary. Michael Baker, the film's director, explains, a successful film requires not only a great idea, which we have, but also a successful team, and honestly, I don't think you can find a better crew of people on either side of the camera than the one we've got right here. This project has all the right pieces. It's unique, it's exciting, and I have no doubt it's destined for success. The Museum of the Paranormal's theatrical teaser can be seen at www.museumoftheparanormalmovie.com. And if you want more information, you can contact Michael J. Baker at New Gravity Media, P.O. Box 202, Burlington, Mass., or mbaker@newgravitymedia.com. And we are looking into getting him back on the show again here real soon. I was emailing him the other day, so we're going to have to get him back on here to talk about that. Here's another article. Ghost hunters say voice led them to bones. Paranormal group finds bones behind a historic mansion wall. This is in Wellsburg, West Virginia. A historic Brook County, West Virginia mansion is at the center of a police and paranormal investigation after skeletal remains were found hidden behind a brick wall. Gene Valentine, the building's owner, told Steubenville news station WTOV that it all started when a paranormal research group came to the Aspen Manor to hunt for ghosts. While there, some members of the Brook County Paranormal Society said they sensed someone was buried in a basement wall and said they followed the voice to the area. A couple of the psychics that were part of the group got physically sick when they went down there, and they couldn't figure out why, said Valentine. The paranormal group came to the 76,000-square-foot mansion in search of spirits, but had no idea they would find skeletal remains. It wasn't what we actually went in looking for, said Kathy Lamps. Lawrence, that's it, a member of the group. Lawrence said they found a bone on the floor, so she picked it up thinking it was probably an animal bone. She kept digging, and as she did, she found more and more bones. Sheriff Richard Ferguson said the bones had been chopped up into pieces and had saw marks on them. The remains were removed from the wall and are being sent to the state medical examiner, who will determine if they are human or animal. They found some questionable bones, and I still cannot confirm or deny that they're human, Ferguson said. They appear to be very old but still intact, and we have no time frame. We're actually looking back into the history of this area. In the meantime, in the former nun's quarters, Lawrence said she, her husband, and another investigator made another finding. She said the trio was using electronic voice phenomenon equipment and heard clicking sounds. Nuns would use these clickers when kids would get, like, really loud and wouldn't settle down. They'd start clicking, she said. Valentine said he isn't surprised by the findings. I've had a few psychic friends walk through here, and they've had really bad reactions in the house, Valentine said. He said he's restricting access to the mansion until the sheriff's department gets more answers. The sprawling Aspen Manor mansion was built in 1895 by the Vandergriff family as a boys' getaway that hosted gambling and cockfights. Later, the Catholic community took over and turned it into an assisted living home, where nuns and priests once lived. The mansion has since been converted to a bed and breakfast. And one more I got here. Jenna Bush was actually on Jay Leno beginning of the month, and she claimed she saw ghosts during her time in the White House. 27-year-old teacher, who now works as an education correspondent for the Today Show, said, I heard a ghost. I was asleep. There was a fireplace in my room, and all of a sudden I heard 1920s music coming out. I could feel it. I freaked out and ran into my sister's room. She was like, please go back to sleep. This is ridiculous. The next week we were both asleep in my room. The phone had rang and woke us up. We were talking and going back to bed when all of a sudden we heard this opera coming out of the fireplace. We couldn't believe it. We both jumped in bed and were asking the people that worked there the next morning, are we crazy? We tried to rationalize it, but they said they heard it there all the time. Jenna and her family lived at the Washington, D.C. presidential home from 2001 to 2009. The former first daughter confessed she'd never seen Abraham Lincoln's ghost, which is said to regularly haunt the White House, but wished she had. Lincoln's ghost is widely reported to walk up and down the second floor hallway, knock at doors, and stand at certain windows with his hands clasped behind his back. Indeed, Winston Churchill refused to sleep in the former president's bedroom after reportedly spotting his ghost lurking there. The British Prime Minister had stepped into the room after a relaxing bath with a cigar and a glass of scotch. Still naked, the premier is reported to have spied an apparition of Lincoln standing by the fireplace. The pair are said to have stared at each other for some time before the ghost faded away. I don't know what's scarier, Lincoln's ghost or the thought of Winston Churchill standing naked. Former First Lady Hillary Clinton has also spoken about the spooky atmosphere in the White House. The U.S. Secretary of State said, "There's something about the house at night that you just feel like you are summoning up the spirits of all the people who have lived there and worked there and walked through the halls there." She told the Rosie O'Donnell show, "It's neat. It can be a little creepy. You know, they think there's a ghost there. It's a big old house, and when the lights are out, it is dark and quiet, and any movement at all catches your attention." Indeed, Harry Truman once wrote to his wife, "I sit here in this old house all the while listening to the ghosts walk up and down the hallway. At 4 o'clock, I was awakened by 3 distinct knocks on my bedroom door, but no one was there. Damn place is haunted, sure as shooting." As well as human hauntings, there have been tales of a demon cat prowling the building's basement. According to legend, years go by without a sighting of the animal, but when it does appear, national disaster is said to be imminent. Some witnesses claim the demon cat first appears as a helpless-looking kitten, which grows in size and menace the closer one gets to it. A White House guard claimed to have seen it a week before the great stock market crash of the 20s, and it was also reportedly seen days before the assassination of JFK. So, yeah, grave secrets, definitely. I see you in the chat room there. Yep, Churchill naked. I think that's the scarier part of the story. Seeing Lincoln's ghost wouldn't scare me half as much as seeing the living, breathing Churchill naked with a glass of scotch. So, all right, we got about, 10 more minutes or so here till our guest comes in, Dustin Perry from Ghost Hunters International. So, usually somewhere during the show, we do our little segment of shameless self-promotion, seeing as our show pays us absolutely nothing. We got to make some money somehow in our pockets, and I choose to do it by working from home. So, I'll fire this up here, get this out of the way, and then we'll be back with our featured guest for this evening.
Send Out Cards is one of the greatest tools available to follow up with your customers. We call it relationship marketing. Now, you've probably heard that phrase before. True relationship marketing is about reaching out and genuinely caring about that customer or client. They don't care about what you're offering. They care that you care about them. When we talk about relationship marketing, we talk about sending a greeting card out to a customer with a genuine heartfelt message in it, in your own handwriting. That's what true relationship marketing is all about. We've designed a system and sent out cards that helps you do just that. In fact, you choose a greeting card, type in a message, push the send button, and our company will print that card, stuff it, stamp it, and mail it out for you. If you'd like more information on this amazing system, call Alan today.
Send Out Cards offers an online system that allows you to log in from anywhere in the world, type a message, and click the send button. The company then actually prints a physical greeting card in your handwriting with your signature and mails it to your recipient in the mailbox.
All for under $1. You can even add a gift and have it sent along with your greeting card. It's easy, it's quick, and it's something anybody can do. You can become a customer of Send Out Cards, but you may also select our entrepreneur option, which gives you the ability to participate in our compensation plan and create a residual side income stream for yourself and your family, all while working part-time around your already busy schedule. Send Out Cards isn't your average company. It was founded with a specific mission in mind.
You know, Send Out Cards is all about acting on promptings. That's why this whole business started. It's the whole mission, it's the whole cause, it's the crusade that all of us are on, is to help millions of people act on their promptings every day, reaching out in kindness to others. The challenge to promptings are is they come into your mind and they leave your mind about as fast as they come in. You don't have a whole lot of time to act on them. So that's the beauty of Send Out Cards, is it provides you a way that when the prompting comes to reach out in kindness, a thank you, I appreciate you, I care about you, job well done, anything like that, you can quickly act. And you can celebrate the life of the person you're sending that message to.
As a company, Send Out Cards is privately held, debt-free, and has virtually no competition. The company was also recently featured in Success From Home magazine. At Send Out Cards, you do three things. First, you gather a few customers. Second, you find those who are also interested in the second income stream. And finally, help other people do the exact same thing. That's it. By doing those three simple things, you can create a significant side income stream for yourself and your family.
Once we went onto a gift account and really experienced the magic and send in a card, that was it.
Okay, look, send cards and teach others how to send cards. That's it.
When I realized this compensation plan and that there was some serious money on the table, that's when I left my job, my six-figure corporate job, to take this business full-time from day one.
I just view this as there's no one that shouldn't at least know this exists. And personally, I think there's no one that shouldn't be using it.
Ask yourself these two questions. Can you think of anyone that could use a service like Send Out Cards? Do you know anyone that could use some extra money? Well, if the answer to either of those two questions is yes, then I have great news for you. You can do this business. Try out a free gift account. And you can actually send out a few cards yourself.
This is Al Shepard, and I've been using Send Out Cards for a while now. It's a great way to work from home, make some extra income, and a great way to put the law of attraction to work in your life every day. You owe it to yourself. Go to www.teamshepard.com or give me a call, 516-422-5379.
That's the sound of your door when the happy birthday cake from Send Out Cards arrives with your personalized birthday card. You can now send a cake with a card, and your loved one can simply add water, then throw it in the microwave for 60 seconds, and celebrate their birthday with a quick and delicious happy birthday cake. It comes with everything you need. Just add the water and start the celebration 1 minute later. You'll get the cake, sprinkles, frosting, candle, party horn, balloon, and the measuring supplies. This perfect single-serving chocolate cake is just 32 points in the Send Out Card system and $6 shipping and handling. Oh yeah, one more thing. Happy birthday. Check out www.sendoutcards.com for a unique and fast way to send custom greeting cards and gifts to. Down, boy. Hey, if you're like us, you love your pet.
Who's a good boy?
That's why Send Out Cards has gifts for both dogs and cats. Send Out Cards allows you to send that adorable canine or fluffy kitty tasty treats. For those dog lovers, Send Out Cards has minty fresh and up-close milk bones, so when you smooth that pup, it's unforgettable. And if you have a good kitty, the crunchy and delicious cat treats that come in a custom green gift bag keep them coming back for more. Don't forget your favorite pet. Let them know just how much you love them and send them a card and treat today from Send Out Cards. The minty milk bones are only 33 points and $6 shipping and handling. Those cat treats are 29 points in the Send Out Card system and just $6.50 shipping and handling. Check out www.sendoutcards.com for a unique and fast way to send custom greeting cards and gifts to. Did you know that Send Out Cards has a whole new gifting category? That's right, novelty books are now available to send with your greeting cards. Titles such as How to Cheer Up Crabby People in Your Life and How to Confuse the Idiots in Your Life are now available. Just go to the books and magazines section and find the novelty books category to start sending these fun and inexpensive gifts to your friends and family. Just another fun way to spread the joy at Send Out Cards.
just waiting about 5 minutes here for our guest to show up. And you don't realize how hard it is to do a show all by yourself. So make sure you appreciate all those people that do those shows out there all by themselves. I learned a long time ago on my other show, my music show, that after about three episodes, actually it was two. Yeah, the third episode I brought in a co-host because after the second episode I realized it's just too darn hard to not have anyone to bounce off of, to get ideas from. And so we got a few minutes left here till our guest shows up. If there's anything you want to talk about, give me a call. And, of course, my phone number is, like, missing. I can't see it. It's not showing up on my screen. I swear Blog Talk does this to me every single week on purpose. They hide stuff on me. So, anyways, our call-in number is 646-716-5896. So, if you've got anything you want to discuss for a few minutes before our guest gets here, give me a call. If not, I'm going to sit here and rattle on about I don't know what. There was something I wanted to mention to you, and I can't think of what the heck it was now. It totally went in my mind and back out. Michael Baker, who I mentioned earlier from New Gravity Media, he's been working on a sort of a paranormal database, a clearinghouse, if you will, where all the different investigative groups in the country can choose to submit their anonymous findings or results from investigations so that they can all be compared to one another and see if we can find any relative pattern to, okay, certain nights of the month activities more than other times or things like that. So we're going to see, going to follow that along a little bit, see how that works out, and then we will let you know as that progresses. All right, I got to jump out of here for a second. Someone's on the phone. I got to go see who it is. We'll be back in just a minute.
Hi, for those of you who just tuned in, everyone here is a crazy person. You know, I think there may be a valuable lesson for you gals here about inviting strange men into your bedrooms.
And now, on to America with Josh Mantello and Al Shepard.
Come on, let's get this gay show on the gay road. Help me out here.
Any of you that have been to his website know why I chose that music. From Ghost Hunters International, what I found to be the probably one of the few normal paranormal researchers. I'm so happy to have Dustin Perry here with us. Dustin, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Al. How you doing tonight, brother? I really wished I could show that video on the radio, but I couldn't quite figure out how to do it.
Can't see it, brother. That's a YouTube point.
that was just too much.
Thank you, man. I do what I can. I'm a big fan of Supernatural, so when I saw they had that at the end of one of their episodes, I'm like, that's something I'm going to have to do for myself.
Well, it reminded me, because I, with my music show that I do and stuff, I hang out a lot at MySpace Karaoke, just kind of watching the people, listening to the people sing, and they came out with video karaoke over there, and I've seen a lot of really talented people come up with some great videos, so when I saw that one, I was watching it, I said, yeah, that's cool.
Thanks.
So, personally, I don't know that much about you. So, I mean, I know what I see on TV, and of course, everybody knows that. So, I'm a little more interested in the before and after type thing. So how did you get started, or when did you get started with an interest in the paranormal?
My earliest beginnings, my first interest in the field happened when I was around 8 or 9 years old, growing up in a little house in Providence, Rhode Island, and I had a nighttime encounter with a shadow figure, which had actually woken me up from a sound sleep, and it was in the doorway, and I was absolutely petrified. I didn't know what to do. The thing just was kind of lingering there, and I just kind of ducked my head under the covers and lay there shaking, and pretty much didn't get to sleep for the rest of the night. I was just terrified by the whole thing, and I never saw it again while I was there, but it was that first encounter that really kind of got me into it. I was always a big fan of the Halloween experience. That whole time of year was always fantastic for me, especially growing up in New England. And as soon as I was able to get wheels, you know, as soon as me and my buddies turned 16, we started checking out all the local hotspots, all the little abandoned places in the woods and stuff, just trying to, scare ourselves for the most part. And then from there, it just kind of took off into something that I became more and more interested in, started researching more. I was laying in my bed one night, and I happened to catch the tail end of Ghost Hunters. This was in their first season. And I was like, oh, it's a pretty decent show. I have to catch it out again. And actually, it took me a couple of times before I caught the whole show. And then in the beginning, I had seen pictures of Warwick, Rhode Island, which wasn't far from where I was. So I just kind of went and sent some emails and made a pest of myself until they took me under their wing and they told me I wouldn't be on the program, which was no problem. I just wanted to actually work with a group in which I would be able to get access to places because I was tired of getting harassed by the police and such. So it worked out from there. They put me on a couple of home cases. They ended up putting me on the show. And it was a crazy ride from there, man. You know, I left Ghost Hunters after a couple of seasons because I wanted to get married and start a family and I didn't really want to stay on the road doing that kind of stuff. I've always been a hardworking guy, working a regular couple of jobs back here. And they started GHI. They gave me a call, said, you want to come on board this new project? And unfortunately, I couldn't do it at the time because my youngest one, a little daughter, was just born, and I really needed that bonding time. But came around, the opportunity presented itself again, and my wife and I talked it over and decided it was a good opportunity for us. So, I'm back in the business. So, I never really get out of it as far as the field itself. But the television end of it, I thought I was done with. I wasn't a big seeker of fame. You take what comes down the pike, and you're thankful for your blessings, and that's where I ended up.
Well, I like I said before, you seem to be the normal, level-headed ghost hunter person, you know? I mean, anyone else probably would have threw the kids to the side and headed for Hollywood or something, you know? And I really respect you for keeping your priorities straight, you know?
Oh, thank you. It is a constant struggle, I'll tell you that, man. You know, even especially doing international, being away from the wife and the children is very, very difficult. I'm always out there, you know, and it's very common for the guys to find me kind of alone in my room, just kind of fighting with myself about it just internally. I just get very upset. I'm like, am I being a good father? Being away from them, I feel like I'm being a horrible dad, but at the same time, I feel that part of that role is the father is also a provider for the family, and that's what I'm trying to do. It's a double-edged sword, of course, but I make the most of the time I can when I'm home, and we have a nice couple of month break now, so just working my couple of regular jobs to keep things going back here and doing the appearances and such and some guest investigations and just checking out some local places with my buddies. But, yeah, man, it's good to keep it real, you know. I've never been one of those star-eyed Hollywood types.
Yeah, I know what you're saying about the struggle between being the provider and then being home. You know, I guess think we probably all go through that. You're just a lot farther away.
Indeed,
but
indeed.
Can I ask what your regular jobs are?
Sure. I actually have a couple that I keep going here. Since I'm away so long, I just kind of relinquished it to part-time status. When I was back here, I had two full-time jobs and one part-time, so I really wasn't home much anyway. But now when I come back, I work as an anesthesia technician part-time for facial and oral cosmetic surgery. I also work in advertising and marketing as an editor, a writer, and a camera operator. And then I also moonlight part-time as a audio and video operator for the Pawtucket Red Sox, which is Boston's local minor league affiliate.
All right. Well, you're just all over the place, aren't you? I was waiting for you to say something like I drive a garbage truck or something. You
know? That's probably the one job I haven't held.
But yeah, boy, I had all these questions in my head, and you got talking, and they just all fluttered right out. So I'm gonna have I'm gonna have to wing it, I guess. Here, yeah. Well, I guess my first thought is, without getting into details, does the show pay you enough to make it worthwhile to tromp all over the world like that?
Yeah, well, you know, they take good care of us.
Okay,
you know, that's you know, when I first started out, obviously it was a different time and everything. But you know, the people at Pilgrim Films have always been very good to me. I've never really had any issues with them. So I think they do a great job with all their programming. Me personally, you know, they make it worth my while to go out there and stuff. You know, like I said, it's still a struggle. You know, the economy's tough, things are crazy. I'm not going to buy any brand new sports cars anytime soon. That's for sure. But everything's cool. And plus, you know, coming from a standpoint of somebody who's been interested in the field for so long, there's a lot of reward in that, because I remember watching, you know, the Travel Channel and stuff and seeing these haunted places across the world and thinking, wow, I'd love to go to these places. There's no way I'll ever get to, you know, I'm always going to be stuck in the local places around here. So to be watching something on TV one day and then all of a sudden to be there a couple of years later, it's unbelievable. I remember one that really stands out to me, the case itself turned out to be horrible from a paranormal standpoint, with being Vlad Dracula's castle in Romania. I remember watching that and seeing all the stairs you'd have to climb and seeing the view from the top, and I was like, wow, that place is fantastic. And then we get there. We did a great two-night investigation. It was raining one night. We were carrying all the stuff up the stairs every night. There's like 1,500 stairs. It's ridiculous. And nothing ever showed itself, you know, not the faintest thing. But I remember just standing up there and looking down and thinking, you know, I'm actually here. You know, how many people can say that they've traveled to this place and, you know, are standing where I'm standing now?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. I haven't been in this that long. I've always had an interest in the paranormal, and that's why I started this show, because I figured what better way to learn than to learn from the best, you know, just bring them on here and pick their brain. And so the only place I've really gotten to go to is down to the Houghton Mansion a couple times.
Right.
And as you know, the ghosts don't show up on cue, so I still haven't had that one convincing piece of evidence present itself yet. But it has been a lot of fun just walking around in the dark, talking, and just I did catch an EVP here and there, but nothing fantastic. So
yeah.
I know what you're saying there. How many countries have you been to now? I've lost track.
I've lost track myself. I've got two passports, and both of them are pretty filled up. It gets pretty crazy. You know, they keep us moving. When we're on the road, it usually takes us 2 weeks to film one episode. And within that 2 weeks, we're in two locations within a country usually. And we're on the road for, you know, maybe a month at a time. So we hit, you know, between two and three countries every road trip, depending on time and how the episode's coming along. So it gets pretty crazy. And, you know, as you were saying about the Hovind Mansion, you know, because we were just up there recently doing that investigation, it, that place is fantastic. It's a beautiful place. I like the history with the old Masonic lodge in there. And, there's definitely some weird things going on there, nothing that I was able to capture myself. But I have received some emails and stuff from people who lived this that night who've captured an EVP or so. So it's a pretty interesting place, though.
Yeah, like Josh said, you know, they don't come out on cue, and but he's there, got full reign of the place anytime he wants, and he's
yeah.
continuously running up against things there. But you just have to be there at the right time, I guess. Traveling all these different countries, do you ever run into any problems with the? I don't know what. Well, you'd probably tell me. with locals or terrorists or anything else that go on behind.
Thankfully, not terrorists. But there's always some issues. You know, obviously the language barrier is always something. You know, everybody on the team, even though they don't show it on every episode, sometimes they throw it up on the web. Everybody on the team gets, you know, between 6 and 12 questions. Usually each one of us will get those translated by a local so we can use them in our EVP sessions to try to branch out into languages that were spoken there before or spoken there at the time. My little bit of high school Spanish only goes so far. Like, I can translate very well if I was, like, talking to somebody like Dora the Explorer. But when it comes to actually walking around trying to talk to the local people, I get a little lost. But, you know, it goes okay. The language barrier is probably first and foremost. Customs is always an issue. I've learned not to put down that I'm a paranormal investigator because they just look at you like you're crazy, and then you get detained, and they ask all these questions, and it's tough enough as it is to get in and out of places. So that's always something else. And for me personally, the toughest part is the food. I'm a very finicky eater, and a lot of places we go aren't really they don't cater to my specific taste, that's for sure. So it becomes a little bit of a challenge. Sometimes I live on peanut butter and bread. But hey, you know, whatever works, whatever will get me through there.
Yeah, well, you strike me as a burger and fries kind of guy. So
No, not at all.
No,
I don't like fast food at all. Actually, when I'm on the road, McDonald's, I probably eat more McDonald's on the road than I ever do when I'm at home. I'm more into pizza and pasta, straight up Italian kind of thing. So I do okay with that. But a lot of these other countries, man, they love seafood. So anytime you try to get pasta, there's a pound of seafood on top of it. That doesn't work out for me. I've only been on the planet 30 something years. And I've already peed in the ocean enough to know that I should be eating out of it.
I never thought of that, but yeah, not mentioning everything that actually lives in the ocean,
right.
That does it on a daily basis.
there's dinosaurs that are dead in there, mobsters, all kind of stuff. I don't want to be eating off of.
Maybe that's where you ought to start searching underwater. You might find like Jimmy Hoffa or something. Oh man. We've got our quote of the day right there. So you're on a break now, is it? Kind of going from place to place here in the States?
Yeah, on a break from filming for GHI. Right now there's a couple episodes of GH, the original domestic show, that are airing that I appeared in. I came back from filming GHI and filmed a couple episodes with these guys. Well, Steve and Tango were off doing Ghost Hunters Academy. So for the next couple of weeks, I'll be on the new episodes of Ghost Hunters. And then, of course, there's new episodes of Ghost Hunters Academy right after that, which is doing very well. And, of course, we're all very proud of Steve and Tango for their accomplishments with that one. And so, yeah, in the meantime, I'm actually working on the second book with Barry. We've been writing away on that one, a follow-up to our book we just put out called The Complete Approach. And then I'm just, you know, doing some local events, traveling a little bit around the country. I've been speaking at some colleges and things like that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about your book called The Complete Approach. So I assume it's the I haven't got to read it yet. It's the complete approach to ghost hunting, I'm guessing.
It's the complete approach as the best we could put it out there to paranormal investigating. We try to combine the scientific approach, which is the measurement standard that we go by, because we don't want to just go off impressions and stuff that people get. But at the same time, we thought it was very important to include a little bit of the metaphysics and about how different realities are viewed and such, and how some of these theories can actually tie together. I think for too long, you've seen researchers that have gone one way or the other. You know, it's either the New Age bookstore and the meditation books and psychic impressions, or it's DVR cameras, EMF gauges, and you don't see a crossover between the two. We don't use mediums and stuff on the program, but I think there is something to be warranted to be said that if you combine the two, you can kind of use these impressions to find out maybe where to better target, better to point your equipment. And anything that'll get us better results and more answers is something that, I'm definitely willing to be a part of.
Well, that's it. A lot of the groups that we discuss here on the show from time to time, it seems like they're just more interested in catching that one piece of evidence, the EVP or the video clip or something that they can throw up on their website. They're not interested in anything that can't be documented and shown off to someone else,
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of the paranormal community has become, who's got the biggest EMF detector? It's just like, that's not what it's about, To me, I don't even like the term ghost much myself. I'm looking at more at a spirit, as a human spirit kind of thing. It becomes a very spiritual quest for me. I don't need to validate anything for my own belief system, but I think that, what we're capturing and what we're talking to and then what we're taking photos of, I think is very important to think about on a higher level and to look at the big picture. Are we actually capturing evidence of some sort of afterlife? And I think that's the question that really drives me forward. And that's the thing that I'm really looking at. I don't want just a cool picture to put up on a website somewhere. I want to try to build this thing together to get the final answer.
Yeah, and Josh and I talk about this a lot. He's the paranormal investigator, and he's into going into a house and trying to validate the presence of someone who hasn't crossed over yet. Yeah. And my angle that I come at it, I read The Voices from Eternity by Sarah Estep, she's the founder of the AAEVP. And over a 20-year period, she simply sat in her office and turned on a tape recorder, 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes at night, and after a while started actually speaking and getting messages from people who were already in heaven, who have crossed over, and right. were talking back to her and describing to her what it was like in heaven. And that's the angle I'm really interested in, is I want the people that have already crossed over to tell me what to expect when I get there, and that's what I want to know about.
No, I totally agree. And, that's the beautiful thing about it, too. I mean, we're at a standpoint, and we're at a point on GHI where we're very fortunate to travel to all these incredible places and with this rich, lush history. But spirit is everywhere. I mean, you can do EVP sessions within your home, and regardless of there being history there or not, there's still a chance that you may, through a repetitive and regimented schedule, you may be able to attract somebody or something that you can hopefully do consecutive EVP sessions with and perhaps establish some sort of relationship and get some sort of answer.
Yeah, exactly. That's basically what she said. It took her about 6 months for them to realize that, hey, she's serious and she's doing this every day at the same time. And it got to the point where she says that they would actually be there in her office waiting for her to turn the recorder on so they could start talking, because they just wanted to spill their guts to her so bad. And like hundreds and hundreds different people would show up there. And over a 20-year period, she's got a ungodly amount of recordings, I guess. So that's just a part. That and Bob Monroe's books, about his out-of-body experiences and how he traveled to different places and around and here and there in different dimensions and all that really intrigues me as well. So, yeah, now I lost my train of thought again. Somebody walked by.
I get distracted by shiny objects, too, sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. That's what. Oh, shiny. okay. So what? Where can we find your first book?
It's on Amazon.com. It's on BarnesandNoble.com. Barnes & Noble, most of the stores get a limited run of them. They were kind of sold out when they came in. But if you go and ask your local Barnes & Noble store to order the Complete Approach, they can pick it up for you. And then Barry and I have a website, CompleteApproachBook.com. And you can order through there, which links to Amazon and Barnes & Noble as well.
Okay. Now, what is the what's the second book going to be about?
The second book is I can't get into it too much because I don't want somebody to steal it before I get it out there. But we're hoping to get it out in the early part of next year, and it's going to be looking more at the paranormal from a global standpoint. You know, like I said, we do spend time in these countries, not just to film the show, but you know, we're there for at least a week or 2 weeks at a time. So Barry and I have been trying to meet with locals at each place and speak to them about their views on the paranormal field, and we're writing down the differences between them. But we're really focusing on the characteristics that seem to be breaking the language barriers and breaking the borders, and it really seems to be to yielding some interesting results.
Very good. Yeah, I was just talking before you come on the show. Michael J. Baker is putting together this kind of a paranormal research database, and he shot me an email, and he's looking for people to help enter data into this. And basically what he wants to do is just take all kinds of information from investigations, you know, day of the week, time of the day, humidity, moon phases, everything this, what you caught for evidence and all this, put it all into this big database nationwide or worldwide, and then see if they can correlate some patterns coming out of it. So they can say, you know, at this particular time of the year, at this particular day, there's more activity going on than there is at another time, and see if we can find some pattern to this. So I wasn't sure if you were aware of that, so I thought I'd just fill you in on that in case you hadn't heard of it.
There is definitely something to be said for, we often look into before we go to an investigation where the moon phases are at, especially the waxing, the waning phases seem to be yielding a little better result. At least that's from my note. And of course, anytime there's seismic activity and stuff, we look into that to see how that may be reacting with certain things within the environment, maybe stirring up some residual activity if you believe in the stone tape theory on a certain level. So we look into a lot of stuff like that as well. Of course, you know, there's still a lot being done with ion counters and stuff like that, trying to just pick up these other signals to help us get a better idea of when the best opportunities are.
Talk about ion counters and all that stuff. Did you ever run across that show I mentioned to you with the Parabot?
No comment, please.
All right. Anyways, if anybody's got a question for Dustin, you want to give a call in or type it in the chat room, I'll read it. Elfie typed here that she wants to know what you do claim as your occupation at Customs, seeing as you don't tell the truth.
I actually have just started writing down rock star, and I don't get any questions about that.
No way.
Yeah, it's great. For some reason, they just accept that. They're like, okay, sure.
Cool. Can I have your autograph? I don't know who you are, but you're a rock star. Can I have your autograph?
The only place I ran into a problem was in England. They said, well, are you somebody that is very well known? I said, well, it depends on what circles you ask. He's like, well, you're not like, I mean, we could hire someone local to do your job here. I said, well, I don't know, maybe you could. He's like, well, you're not Madonna. I said, well, no, sir, you're very observant. I clearly am not Madonna.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, you're definitely not Madonna.
No, no.
Where'd the rock star thing come from?
Paranormal rock star came out of a conversation I was having with somebody who's doing an interview like this. I think it was actually for a written publication. And we were talking about the traveling and all that, and I was alluding to the difficulties of being a good-hearted family man and then being on the road and missing my wife and my children. And he said, well, he said, you know, at least when you get older and your child is older, you can explain to her all the stuff you did. You know, you kind of travel the world like a rock star. And it just kind of came together after that. And, it's just kind of a funky, fun name and just kind of stuck with it.
Well, somebody commented in the chat room here, it's the hair. And I got to say one thing about that. After walking through the Houghton Mansion in the dark, I'm glad you got your hair spiked the way it is, because I can immediately tell it's you coming down the hallway, even in the dark. So that's a great thing to have.
And it works on a couple of levels. It's great for identification. And also, it kind of works like whiskers, like on a cat. Like when we're doing caverns and stuff, I never hit my head because I've kind of got like, you know, 6-7 inches up there of, like a sensor. Give me a little bit of a warning that there's a low ceiling.
There you go. I never thought of that. That would work.
It's both fashionable and function.
Hey, that boy, you're just always thinking, aren't you? Now, being the paranormal rock star.
It's not easy, I'll tell you that.
Well, I'm wondering from your marriage standpoint, do you get like love letters in the mail or email? And,
well, I mean, not so much in the mail, thankfully. My wife is she's a real sweetheart, and I'll tell you, if we didn't have the relationship that we have, and she wasn't the person that she is, I would have never agreed to go back out on the program. We've been together since, before I was on the original program. So it's nice to know that she's always loved me for who I am, with all my shortcomings and everything else. But, she's a fantastic woman. So sometimes I think she gets a little annoyed. Sometimes, you know, we're at Walmart or something, and a girl starts screaming like one of the Beatles, and we're back in 1964. But other than that, she's very understanding with all of it. We trust each other quite a bit. Like I said, if it wasn't like that, I wouldn't be on the road at all.
Exactly. But I just had this feeling that, yeah, that you probably got quite a few Walmart stories like that one, I would imagine. Oh, man. How long have you been together?
Let's see, about 7 years or so.
All
yeah.
Right.
Married for just three.
Well, we've been together 29 and we've been married 23. So you keep going. You've got the recipe there for a good long stint.
I think we do. I'm very thankful for it. I really think we do.
Somebody wants to know how long you're planning to stay in this field.
I'll never leave this field. I will work on the television program as long as they're asking me to, as long as it's feasible for my family and I to do such. But when that's over, I'm still going to be in this field. I'm still going to be doing investigations. I still plan on working on the books and such. I think it's really important. I think the literary contribution is the most important for me personally because, you know, the TV shows now, there's a ton of them out there. Everybody's aware of what's out there and what they watch and such. And, I've looked back over the years and I've looked at this field from a larger perspective. And I do a lot of reading, not just in the paranormal, but just I enjoy reading quite a bit. And I do read a lot about the field and how it's changed over the years and how it's come along. And I think it's important to note that there is a constant ebb and flow within this community. And I think that's partly to blame as to why we haven't achieved all the answers that we want to achieve, because as interest in the field grows and technology and stuff is developed and more interest grows, there's always someone, charlatans and such, that want to make a little extra buck off it, get a little notoriety out of it, and, whatever. It's to each their own, I suppose. It's not for me. I've always been somebody who's been very honest and very a God-fearing person, and I don't believe in being deceptive in any way. And I think what happens is, unfortunately, especially the people that make the money off, like the widows and stuff like that, you know, they get a little bit of family information, and they go to the widow, they find in the paper, and they have messages from beyond the grave, and they take them for a bunch of money, and they completely fleece them. That stuff makes me absolutely sick. But I think what happens is, as I was saying, you know, the interest in the field grows, more and more people get into it. Somebody of some notoriety will get called out for being a fake, and then everyone else just kind of gets lumped along with them, unfortunately. And then it ends up one of these things where, despite all the evidence that has been collected, you throw out the baby with the bathwater, and now we're back at square one again, or real close to it. And I've read some great publications from years back who had actually alluded to a lot of stuff to do with the full spectrum technology, which is what we're working with now, on a much much lower level, of course, back then. But the theory and stuff was kind of present. And I think it's important for us to not only be using that kind of stuff on the show, but putting it out there in print, so that, you know, when the hit comes in this field, I want to make sure that that it's out there, written down, that, you know, there were legit investigators in this field and people that were dedicated to it who were getting evidence, and this is how they were getting it. So that, you know, when the next spike comes, people don't have to go all the way back to square one.
Well, maybe you ought to think about a radio show, huh?
I don't know if I have much time, but it's possible.
Oh, well, Blog Talk's good for that, at least. You can sit right in your living room and do it, you know?
Yeah.
That's why you tend to hear all these weird noises behind me. During the day, I'm at a regular radio station, and it's a lot quieter there, so I sometimes I think about going down there to do it. That's what I always think is the beauty of this field, is that at this particular point, it's wide open. There's, you know, you could go in any direction that you want in any theory that you have and pursue it, and you've got just as much chance as anybody else does to finding that piece of evidence. Like I mentioned to you at the hotel, Josh and I have been arguing back and forth, you know, can you possibly be an expert or a specialist in this field? And I've been saying no, because no one knows what's right and wrong yet.
Absolutely. You know, I'll tell you, man, when I do my college presentations, I do a couple of slides there at the top saying who I am and letting people know my background and stuff. And then I have one that says who I'm not. And it says in big, bold letters, not the person with all the answers about the paranormal field. And I think it's important that people know that, because anybody who's out there claiming that they know everything there is to know and that they're the expert in this and the other, they're just taking people for their money, or they're just got really problems with delusions and grandeur, because, like you said, the beautiful thing about this field is that there's still so much that's unknown, and it's one of those few things where almost anybody who just has a solid passion for it and some time to kill can get involved and really make that discovery and make that difference. You know, I mean, we live in a day and age where, you know, things like Google Maps are out there. I can see a picture of your backyard taken from space, for Christ's sakes. There's not much left for us to explore here, but the paranormal field is one of those things.
Yeah, because I don't think any of us will actually have the money to explore space or anything. So it's kind of like...
I'm sure. The closest I can get is buying some of that astronaut ice cream when I'm at the Discovery store.
So, yeah, inner space, I guess, is what you'd call it, is kind of where we're left investigating.
Yeah.
But, some people... okay, you know, you've got more knowledge than the average person in your investigative techniques and the way you do things and using certain equipment and all that stuff. But, we could find out 5 years down the road that EMF detectors and EVP recorders didn't really tell us anything. We were totally on the wrong path, you know.
Right.
So,
yeah,
exactly. Like I'm picking on Josh, you know, someday soon you could be proven an expert or a kook just as easily. You know?
Indeed, man. You know, this the other thing that's kind of sad is I talk to a lot of people who are working on new technology and working on different ideas, and some people in this field can be really fierce, you know, and really nasty, and somebody will present an idea or present a piece of equipment, and maybe it's not done to perfection yet. Maybe it still needs some tweaks. It needs some field time. And people will shoot them down so harshly that the the person who invented it or was working on it will just scrap the idea completely instead of pushing forward with it. And I've seen a lot of good ideas that just kind of get thrown to the wayside, and it's really sad.
Yeah, it is. I know when I, just before we started doing this radio show, I jumped on and I was listening in on another one. And the whole hour was just one paranormal group ripping into another one, you know, because they didn't do this right and they didn't do that right. And I'm just sitting there shaking my head going, you don't know if that's right or not. You're just saying, you just think it is, you know, so
you do it. So
I honestly did not know how much politics was involved in paranormal investigating till I really started jumping into it here. So
it gets crazy, man. Really does.
I'm glad you're staying above the fray as we're trying to do here. So
man, it's not easy, but you do the best you can, and you know there's a lot of good. The good thing is that the good people in the field, good-hearted people, greatly outnumber the ones that are in there showboating and talking about how great they are. So 99% of the time, the people you're working with are really cool.
Yeah. Where do you think spirits are hiding? Ultraviolet, infrared? Where do you think? Of course, being a theory, your own opinion, of course.
Yeah,
but,
just based on my field time and things that I've noticed, like I said, using the full spectrum technology, we've definitely started capturing more and more activity, visual activity. UV light itself, I got to tell you, but there seems to be almost like discrepancies within the certain types of entities. As far as I've heard recordings of things where UV light was all of a sudden thrown on, and you hear like this high-pitched, like a screaming sound, almost as if there's something that is adverse about the light that seems to be shining onto these things. The intelligent spirits, the human spirits that have passed on, somewhere within these ranges, we seem to be capturing activity. So, you know, is there a difference between light levels within the spectrum that seem to harbor different types of entities? I don't know. I think that there is something to be said for, like I said, that I actually read this in an old book about, well, not too old, but an older book about IR light being actually detrimental to spirit, and that not so much that it physically harms it, but that there's something that's off-putting about it. And I couldn't figure it out at first, because I was like, oh, it just seems kind of silly, you know? Like, how could this really be bothering them? But then I was filming with the mini DV cam, and I had my IR light on, you know, and all you see is those little red LEDs, it's no big deal. And somebody else had one, and then, you know, when you cross the streams, not to use the Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters reference, but when you cross the IR and you see it in your camera, it is very bright and it's blinding almost, and it has this, you know, this halo effect. So I don't know. I mean, maybe there's things about vision that changes after you pass on. You know, maybe you're seeing in different spectrums and such, so that IR would be almost repelling. And I think that could be tied in with, I mean, most of the shadow activity and stuff I've ever seen captured on IR, they always seem to be very distant. They always seem to be on the opposite wall or the backside of the room, you know. They never seem to be right up front of the camera, right in front of the IR itself. So I wonder if that has something to do with it. Maybe it's something that's pushing them back a little further, whereas the full-spectrum cameras that we've been taking pictures with using low levels of light, red light, instead of the IR, these things seem to be coming a lot closer.
Okay, you got me thinking now. A couple weeks back, we had Mark Nesbitt. Mark Nesbitt, Patty Wilson, and Scott Crownover were on, and Scott showed us a couple photos taken with an infrared lens over his camera. Of course, that's different than actually shooting out an infrared beam.
Right.
But in both of his photos, the ghosts seem to be walking away from the camera, like they're trying to get away from it or something. So you kind of got me wondering now.
I don't know, man. Like, you know, like I said, it's only an idea. It's only something that I'm kind of toying around with. But from what I've seen, my, you know, personal experiences, not just photos other people have shown me, but things that I've captured or things that I've seen teammates capture, there does seem to be something about it that seems to hold true.
So you said now you actually had a spirit scream when you turned on an ultraviolet light?
It wasn't something that I had captured. It was actually something that a friend of mine had shared with me. And it's exactly what it sounded like. You hear the click of the UV light, and then you hear this this screaming, as if there was something about it that they didn't enjoy.
Huh. Okay, I've never heard that before. That's interesting. It makes me think.
It's
actually
just coincidental, of course, but there seems to be something to it.
Well, it makes me wonder. Can these embodied, disembodied spirits feel pain then? You know, if the scream was from pain, then it that kind of throws a whole new light on things.
Yeah. I don't know if it's pain, anger, or whatever, but there seemed to be something that wasn't enjoying it.
Okay, have you used any of the newer gadgets, the Frank's Box or the Obelisk or any of that stuff?
I played around with the Obelisk for a little bit. I actually had some interesting answers that came out of this thing. But, the bottom line is it's a word generator like anything else. And, it seemed to be saying words that apparently it was not programmed to say. So that did seem to be kind of interesting. I've worked with some people who have had it say their name, their full name, and obviously that wasn't in the program. But at the same time, it's hard for me to say, okay, this is a spirit that's manipulating this. Like, I would never take that as a piece of evidence by itself and bring it forward to someone and say, this is the person that's still in your home or whatever. But, it's something that could be used, I think, maybe in conjunction with other pieces of equipment if somebody wanted to. But it's not something that I personally would want to bring forward and continue to use.
Now, do you actually still investigate private homes and things like that?
Not doing so much of anything when I'm home now. I did for a while, in between doing the shows and stuff. Still trying to get into some local places and things of interest, not so much nowadays. There's some people that have approached me from different states. At different events and stuff, they come up to me, explain to me a problem they've had, and I put them in touch with someone I know at a local group. And I do stay in the loop there. I like to stay involved in finding out how the team goes in there, what they discover, talk about different ideas of things that they can do to try to help these people. Because the bottom line is, if somebody approaches you and they do need help with this this type of thing, I think it's important to follow up on it. And unfortunately, due to logistics and time and stuff. Really can't be traveling around taking care of all these cases, but at the same time, I really think it's important to follow up on them.
Okay, we've got a few questions in the chat room here. What would you recommend as far as getting good training in this field?
As far as getting good training, just I think it's important to start out with working with someone that you trust. If you're going to work with somebody else, I think it is important to make sure you know that you're working with somebody you trust. And between the two of you, find somebody that you know that will allow you into their home or a place that perhaps has some activity. Do several investigations there, not just one. Like I said, you don't want to be you don't want to start out like I did. You don't want to be out in the woods in the middle of the night and getting pushed up against some police cars and answering a bunch of questions, because they don't take too kindly to that. And it might be okay now to say you're looking for ghosts, but back when I was doing it, people really thought you were crazy. So
should have told them you were a rock star.
Yeah, I didn't have that kind of foresight at the time. But I think starting out local, starting out maybe at a relative's house or a friend's house or a friend or a friend's house, because there are a lot of legal issues that you can come into once you actually get started and going to other people's houses, as well as safety issues. There's actually, we dedicated a good chunk of the complete approach to forming your own team, getting started in the field, knowing what equipment to use, knowing how to use it, because there's a lot of people out there with a healthy interest, and who knows, perhaps they'll read it and maybe we'll somehow inspire someone who's going to get all the answers.
Well, that's it. I mean, just the strength of numbers, the more people that we can get out there doing this, that much quicker will be to the answer that we're looking for, I would think.
Right.
I want to thank Elfie for that question. Chris has one, wants to know, how long did it take you to recover after you were thrown down in the castle?
I went outside for probably a good half hour or so just to gain my composure. It was freezing cold out there, so I didn't want to stay outside too long, to be quite honest. But it did take me a little while to kind of wrap my head around it. It's still something that, you know, I'll randomly pop in my head and I'll start to try to wonder what was going on at the time and exactly what else I was dealing with. I think it was an important experience for me, though, because at the time, I never met Barry. It was the first time I met Barry and first time I traveled over to that part of the world. And to be quite honest, I didn't really show the proper respect for the culture or for the entity that we were dealing with, you know. And Dave Campbell and I were in there. We were kind of like, you know, feeling a little proud of who we were and what we were doing. And, you know, here comes the big, bad American ghost hunters. And, you know, Barry's trying to warn us about the pressure in the room changing and, you know, how we need to be careful with this and the other. And we're just kind of laughing it off like, this guy's a kook. You know, and next thing I know, I'm laying there flat on my back. So I think it really opened my eyes as to other parts of the world, other cultures, and different belief systems, and perhaps different types of entities as well. You know, in Europe, especially in Ireland, there's a lot of things that are labeled elemental that, you know, here we'd call fairies or, you know, this, that, and the other, which sound really kind of hokey and gimmicky. But it's something, you know, these nature spirits and such that they put a lot of stock in and that that they deal with on a regular basis. And, you know, there could be something said for that.
Yeah, I like the word elemental better because I'm up here in Vermont and fairy has a whole new meaning up here. So let's see. Astro Intuitive has a question here. Do you know if TATS has any plans to investigate the World Trade Center site? And if so, do you think there could be activity, many stories in the air where that many deaths have happened?
I know a lot of people have asked us to do that. A lot of people have asked us to check out the concentration camps from World War II. And it's just one of those things that I don't know if the time would ever be right for that. I definitely don't think it would be right anytime soon. That's for damn sure. I think that a lot of this field a lot of it, to me, hinges on respect. And, you know, if there was something maybe in a building that was built around there that was plaguing somebody and it was causing problems and causing damage, then maybe there would be a legit reason to go in there. But just to go in there to poke around to see if there's any troubled spirits left behind there, you're just opening a can of worms there, you know, and there's a lot of good people that were lost in those types of instances, and it's just it's definitely too close to home for a lot of people, and for me personally, it's not something that I could do.
Just a thought that crossed into my mind from coming at it from another angle, that there may be, like for the World Trade Center site, there may be a bunch of people there that actually have a message that they'd like to get across or something, and for whatever reason can't travel to wherever their loved one is or something like that. Something as small as just like what I use, a little Olympus voice recorder, and just have it in your pocket, turn it on, walk up to the fence or whatever, and just, you know, stand for a while, maybe shoot out a couple questions or something, and just, you know, seems like an unobtrusive way to maybe find out if there's anything unfinished there that wants to be said, you know, without making a big spectacle out of it with a whole van full of equipment and stuff, you know?
Yeah, no, I can understand that point as well. It's just, you know, for me personally, it's not something that that I'd be able to do. I get very emotionally sensitive about some stuff like that. You know, we were in Paris, and we're walking through the catacombs, not the portion of the underground tunnels there where we had filmed the episode, but the actual part where the bones are stored and everything. And I lasted there for about maybe 5 minutes before I had to just put my head down and walk all the way through it and get out of there because it's quite a hike. I was just kind of overwhelmed with, just kind of really sad, you know. You're looking around at all these bones and such, and I just got thinking, you know, all these people lived their life just like I'm living mine now. They all had hopes and dreams and aspirations. They all had loved ones. They all had the daily BS we all deal with jobs and bills and everything else. And for them to be on display like that was really bothersome to me. You know, I just, I don't know, maybe I think too much, man. There's a lot of stuff like that that starts to get in my head. And I don't know, I take things to a spiritual level a lot, and so stuff like that would bother me. Even unobtrusive level, like you said, it'd still be a little too tough for me to ever pull off.
Yeah, I don't know. Years ago, because I do Civil War reenacting, I went to Gettysburg and spent 3 days there, which was nowhere near enough time. And I just, I don't know, got a weird feeling like I belonged there, and I can't wait to get back there now that I'm into paranormal more than I was, and just to see if I can make that connection. You know, so many people died there, and it's such a holy place to those of us who know the whole story and everything, that I don't see it as being intrusive. Of course, well, with the battlefield, you couldn't anyways, because it's wide open. Everybody's tromping all over the place anyways. But I can see what you're saying with the World Trade Center. It probably, well, maybe 50 years from now, because people seem to have a short memory in this country. So, you know, they're gobbling up Civil War battlefields and making them into Walmarts faster than you can count. So
you can't stop Walmart. You just can't stand Walmart. I freaking hate it. If I didn't have to shop there, you know, if they didn't have stuff on sale, I wouldn't be there, man. I hate Walmart. But it's just, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of big corporations and stuff, and it's just I just look around and I just feel like this country is just getting ripped apart by things like that. But, you know, it's the age of technology, it's the age of convenience, and I think a lot of good values and good ways of life are just going down the tube, you know.
Yep.
So I don't even like GPS. I can't stand the GPS system. It drives me crazy. My buddy bought a new house. I drove to it. I used the GPS. I got home. I looked at my wife. I said, if I had to turn around and drive there now and you'd give me $1 million, I couldn't tell you how I got there, because all I did was listen to the stupid woman tell me when to turn.
Yeah, well, then my wife...
I used to be on top of the things, man. I used to know phone numbers. I used to know how to get places. Now it's like, I don't know. Let me look at my cell phone. Let me turn this thing on. It's crazy.
That's like all the ones in McDonald's and all them don't know how to make change and if the computer's down, you know.
Oh, that's classic. I love that. They're like, you give me 20 cents and $2, thanks.
Well, I remember one story where a gentleman went in there and walked in with a $2 bill and wanted to buy something, and the cashier refused to take it because they knew that there was no such thing as a $2 bill. So they called the manager over, and the manager actually called the cops on the guy because the manager knew there was such thing as the $2 bill. So
that's bad. You know what's funny though? Interesting enough, a little tidbit about me that I'll share with you. I have one that I carry around my wallet that my grandmother gave me when I was a little kid, and I still have it, and I keep it in my wallet all the time.
Those are I love. You don't see them very often, but I got a few old ones that I carry around. Lila, let's see if I can read this here. Looks like Lila Eyes in the chat room here says, hi, Dustin. I have a tribute page on you on MySpace, and I wanted to ask if you've ever been to Vermont to investigate any places.
The only place I've been next to in the area was closest thing would have been the Houghton Mansion. That's the only thing I did remotely in that area. I've never really spent a lot of time in Vermont. I used to go skiing up there once in a while, but that's about it. It's a nice enough place. And the wonderful thing about New England is that it's such an old part of the country. We do have a lot of history. You know, one of my other favorite places being St. Augustine down in Florida for the same reason. So I would like to get up there maybe and do some more cases in the future, but I haven't really had the opportunity to do that yet. And thank you, of course, for running the tribute page as well. It's very kind of you. I do appreciate it.
I know, I think it was in the Haunted Vermont book I was reading that right here in Bennington at the cemetery next to the old First Church, in there is buried both revolutionary American soldiers as well as British and Hessians and stuff in there. And supposedly you go in there late at night, you can hear these soldiers yelling back and forth at each other, arguing. So I've been kind of waiting to get up there when I get a chance, and it's only 5 minutes away, and I still haven't got there yet to go walk through with my voice recorder just to see what I can catch. So, okay, let's see. Fiddler says, have you talked about the book that was written by Barry and Dustin? Does he think it's worth buying?
I strongly recommend it. Buy a couple of copies. It's the holiday season, of course, and whether you are celebrating Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, or Christmas, maybe you're just a winter solstice person, it works across the board. It's a wonderful unanimous gift.
Yeah, no matter what your religion, you're all turned to spirit someday. So it's a great cross-cultural type of book for the Christmas season. and then we got, let's see, Chris says you got to come to Michigan, and Elfie says you got to come to Oregon. So I imagine you've got to come all over the country and all over the world.
Whoever said Michigan, I'm actually working on something now. It's not official yet, but if you check out my website, paranormalrockstar.com, under my events page, hopefully within the next couple of weeks, we will be securing a location in Michigan. That will be an event that will be held in January. So check in on my website there in the next couple of weeks. That's paranormalrockstar.com. I also kind of throw stuff up on MySpace and Twitter and Facebook and stuff as well when I have something coming up.
All right. I still rock star. I love that. I could just I could just see you, you know, in a music video or something with a Ghostbusters pack on your back dancing around to a Nickelback song or something. You know,
I actually enjoy Nickelback, and I know they don't get a lot of respect, but I actually enjoy.
Oh, I love Nickelback.
I'm more of a classic rock guy at this stage in the game, but when I was in high school and stuff, I played bass guitar. I sang backup for the band at the time. I'm a big karaoke whore. I love music. I'm a big fan. Now it's just Guitar Hero when I get the chance.
There you go. Yeah, I'm from the late 70s era, you know, the classic rock and stuff. Once I heard Nickelback, their last three albums, I have not been able to find a bad song on any of them. And so I immediately made a whole bunch of bumper music here for the show because it just gets going, you know. So
yeah, that's it. I've got a list of songs that I play on my iPod before we film. It's just my little list to get myself all psyched up and ready to go.
Yeah, I would think that certain songs would get you in the right frame of mind as you head off into the dark and stuff, you know.
You know what's really been working for me for pretty much any occasion is the theme song from Legend of Zelda, the old Nintendo game. There's a couple of versions by orchestras and heavy metal bands, and there's something about that background sound when it's when that's going on. I feel like I could just accomplish anything in the world. It's amazing. It just, I don't know what it is, but it seems to be working.
Yeah, now you got it playing in my head. I can hear it going.
It kind of makes you march forward. You know, you can't give up if that's on.
Yeah, well, yeah, because Zelda's counting on you, Link. There, now we got a new nickname for you. We'll just call you Link.
Yeah, we kind of had similar crazy hairstyles. So I guess it all comes together.
Oh, man. Okay, so we let's see. We talked about your book you haven't written yet.
Yeah.
What do you got for personal appearances coming up? Anything? Or when do you start? When do you start filming again?
We've got a couple of things coming up. We've got benefit for the Tourette's Foundation coming up in New Jersey this Sunday after Thanksgiving. It's something that Bruce Tango, who's been on a couple episodes of Ghost Hunters, Dave Tango's father, really nice man. He hosts this every year. They usually have a performer there. They have a comedian. Then they have a bunch of us there to, do a little meet and greet and question and answer period, talk for a little bit. There's a dinner involved. It's always very nice. This is my first year that I'm actually able to participate, as I'm always on the road. But that's coming up Sunday after Thanksgiving. Tickets for that are available through idealeventmanage.com. There's also a link to that off my site. And so that's the next thing coming up. And then I'm appearing down in a hospital in Pittsburgh, Tennessee, coming up in December, on December 5th. Those are the two things I have on the books right now, and so that should be a good time. I didn't even know there was a Pittsburgh, Tennessee, so I'm kind of excited to see that. And let's see, new episodes of GHI, I think we have, I don't know how many exactly. We got quite a few, though, coming up in January. We filmed some more down in South America and some other locations across the world that have just been fantastic. We had some really good cases. Some of the best places I think we've been in a while. Australia, Tasmania, we've seen some fantastic stuff, grabbed some great evidence. That'll be coming up in January. And then we should be hitting the road somewhere around then, too, to start to crank out some more episodes.
There isn't any grass grows under your feet, is there?
No, definitely not.
All right, Lila Eyes, better known as Mary, from your fan page, says, you're such a great writer. Have you ever thought of writing a biography about yourself?
I don't know if it'd be that interesting. It'd be a tale of some guy who ate a lot of sugary snacks, watched a lot of cartoons, and just worked all the time. But I am toying around with the idea of maybe trying to publish a collection of my blogs that I write, my little travel blogs about my different experiences with different cultures and different things that I've encountered across the world. So I've thought about maybe doing that. Not sure if it's going to come together or not. I'm going to find somebody to stand behind it and put it out, but something I'd like to do.
Yeah, mentioning cartoons, too. I got on your website earlier today, and you suckered me into about 20 minutes of watching cartoons on that stupid site. I'm like, what the heck is this one? So, because I'd never seen most of them, so I'm clicking on it, and I go, wow.
My MySpace page, then. Yeah, I get the old I Love to Sing It, which is old Merry Melodies with the singing and dancing jazz owl, which has always been one of my favorites. And then there's an old Halloween one that's on there, too. I love those old cartoons. They don't get better than that. It's fantastic stuff.
Yeah, but they took all the violence out of them. They're no fun anymore.
Yeah, no, they're not nearly as fun as they used to be. You know, I watch the shows now with my daughter and stuff, and everything's in two different languages at least. And the storylines aren't that interesting. There's not a lot of violence, so it's not really funny. Yeah, you know, it's we're a product of that generation, and things were a little bit different back then. But I miss those old times, you know. I miss those old cartoons and such.
So, confess, do you watch SpongeBob SquarePants?
Oh, yeah. That's the one I really do enjoy. It still has a good dose of violence in it. And, it's got some adult storylines in there that are underlying. It's pretty funny. Yeah, and I like that quite a bit, actually. It's quite funny.
Well, I've done that. My daughter's 16 now, so she's old enough where I've said no. Now, you pay attention to some of these cartoons that you liked as a kid, and then pay real good attention to some of the little puns that are in there and the underlying things that go on, and you'll find that most of these were pretty much written kind of in code for adults.
Yeah.
You know, like the Flintstones was pretty much a ripoff of the Honeymooners.
Right.
You know, and when you realize that, you start watching them in a whole different light, you know, and you start picking up on things. Okay, Elfie wants to know if there's been a site that you've been to that you have at least found partially frightening.
No, not really. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where we really, you know, this is what we look for. So when there's stuff going on that's crazy, it's actually good for us. I have to, you know, there have been some places that have been a little more off the hook than others. The Philippines, Clark Hospital in the Philippines, you know, having captured EVPs and having some crazy experiences there that tied in with some of our own American military history and our own Vietnam vets and stuff. That was a touching one, and it was kind of a freaky one at the same time. To a lesser extent, too, even recently we did Castle Huska in the Czech Republic, and I'm up in the attic with Ashley, who's one of our newer members. And to get that rock thrown back clear across the thing and to just kind of land at my feet, that was pretty crazy. You know, things like that, they both excite you and they fuel you forward to see what else is there, you know. But nothing that would cause me to lose sleep or, you know, make me not want to go back to it. You know, even Lepp Castle, we filmed there for 2 days. And that first encounter where I got knocked over happened on the first night. I went back in there that night, went back in there the night after. Nothing else happened. Nothing else came of it. But I went back in to see if there was.
Well, that's the difference between the normal everyday person and the true investigator. You know, it's like a fireman.
Right.
You run into burning buildings instead of out of them, you know.
Yeah,
and,
indeed.
My first night at the Houghton Mansion, my daughter and I were there, and all of a sudden we heard this woman scream. And she was immediately down the stairs, and I was immediately up the stairs. So I was kind of patting myself on the back afterwards. We come to find out it was someone outside, and they'd left a window open. So it sounded like it was in the building. But I was kind of proud of myself that I was heading up toward it, not down away from it, you know?
That's it. That's the way to do it.
Okay. Chris wants to know, even though it's rare, how would you handle a demonic entity?
Yeah, it is very rare. Obviously, everybody's favorite thing to run into, at least they think it would be. Not something I've ever run into. You know, how would I handle it? I look at it this way. I'm a very centered person. I'm a very spiritual person, very strong person, both emotionally and then spiritually and physically. So I'm not too concerned with anything, you know, hitching a ride with me or influencing me in one way or the other. From my research and stuff, it seems they can be tricky little SOBs, so it's definitely something you got to be cautious around. I think I would try to conduct a session the best I could, capture whatever evidence I could, and say a little prayer and return myself safely out of there when I was done.
So you think you're strong enough all the way around, so possession isn't going to be a problem for you, huh?
I don't think so at all. I think that if, everyone always worries about Ouija boards and they say, oh, don't use Ouija boards. I say, go ahead and use them if you want them. You know, they can be a fun little game. I don't think that Satan has brokered a deal with the good people at Barker Brothers to put out a board game to bring evil into the world. There's plenty of other ways to do that, that's for sure. I think it's just, I think it's one of those things where it's being able to be strong enough to be in control of yourself and not leave yourself susceptible to different things.
Well, I know the one true paranormal experience I had 20 years ago was with a Ouija board, and my wife was actually sitting at it, and I was standing behind her with a couple friends, and we actually had to get a notebook and write the letters down because they were coming so fast we could not read what it was saying. And it just went on and on and on, and we had to write it down. And when we read it back, it said, be nice to your girls and love me too. And it was just really freaky. And then it was about 10 minutes later, this blue flash went through the house. So back then, I actually did run out of the house back then. So,
right.
Of course, that could have been some of the alcohol involved too. So it seems like you're a lot stronger and a lot more confident than, say, Derek Acora, who has to flop on the ground like a fish at least every episode. Okay, we won't pick on Derek anymore tonight. Do you keep in touch with Andy, Brian, and Donna?
I don't keep in touch with them too much, and not for any personal reasons. It's just we're all, busy with our own lives and stuff, and lives have taken different paths and whatever. I bumped into Brian a couple of times at the mall and stuff. He sent me an email here and there. We're on good terms with each other. I think he's actually a really good person. I think he's got a good heart. I think he really does have a passion for the field. Everybody knows he ran into some troubles with some issues on the show and stuff. And those are his own demons that he's fighting. And to his credit, I think he's a good person. I think he's doing the best he can. And he made some choices regarding coming home and being with his family and stuff. And I respect him for that. I think he did the right thing, and I think it was good for him. And I'm glad to see that he's still involved in the field because it is something that's very important to him. Andy, I know, has also done the same thing. He had some children, and he returned home to be with them. Last I heard, he was doing very well. And I know that he still does some investigations and stuff just locally with a group or some friends and stuff. At least that's what I heard. I haven't talked to Donna anytime recently, but I know she was feeling better, she was happy with her decision to return home. But I haven't spoken to her recently either. And like I said, it's just, you know, out of being busy and stuff like that, you know, nothing, no personal, there's no hard feelings between any of us, at least not with me, to my knowledge, so.
Yeah, well, I don't, like you were saying about Brian, it seems like he almost sets the same priorities that you do. And, you know, certain things come first. Yeah, okay, it is TV, but that's not the, you know, not my complete life. So I got to respect him for doing that. And I know there was some talk going on around about some of the women there. What were they calling them? Paranormal divas that were in it solely to propel their television or modeling careers and stuff like that. So, you know, take everything it's said here with a grain of salt, and just there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes that the people on TV don't know that's going on and don't realize, and they're a little quick to make judgments on people, you know. So, let's see. Brian has a new group called the Paranormals. Have you been following that at all, Dustin?
No, I haven't. When I'm home, it's I don't watch paranormal programming, and it's not out of disrespect to anybody else in the field. It's just it's what I do all the time. So you know, if you're a dentist and you pull teeth all day, when you come home, the last thing you want to do is watch other people pull teeth. So I kind of avoid that stuff. And when it comes to the weapon, I don't spend a lot of time on the computers when I'm home. It's just. Just enough to go out there, accept friend requests, update people on where I'm at, what I'm doing, and see if anybody has any problems that they need help with. Then it's just, you know, mainly with my fantasy football team, of course, because that's paramount. And then it's just family time for me, you know. That's what it's all about. I really make the most of this time when I'm home. So I don't really have too much time to follow up on what a lot of other people are doing.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, he's got some new group he's putting together, kind of a nationwide team. I don't know if it's kind of like the Taps family type thing or what, but he's recruiting individual people all over the place. I've been seeing that popping up. So we're hoping to get Brian on the show here in a couple weeks. I've been playing email tag with him back and forth, so maybe he'll come on and we'll find out what he's got going on. Let's see. We've covered your two books. Someone wants Mary wants you to write an autobiography, which that could be interesting. I've been thinking of doing that myself. I just got to find a ghostwriter to help me flesh it out, because I can sum up my whole life in about 25 pages. But you need someone to flesh it out with the the sky was pretty and blue and had fluffy clouds and all that stuff to make it a 200-page novel, you know.
I'm pretty good with all the flowery dialect, so that part comes natural. So I can say that with all honesty, it's something we're very proud of, despite the typos and stuff that you'll read in the complete approach. Just look at it as kind of like a maker's mark. It's just proof that we did it all on our own. You know, I think that was something that we can both be really proud of.
There you go. Well, good. If you're that type of poetic writer, then you really need to pay attention to that email I sent you earlier. Then I can see that as a great avenue for that. Let's see. Elfie wants to know, what places or countries are you going to next season?
I don't know, to be quite honest. You know, the way it works is we do have some input on where we'll go, where we investigate, but it's not entirely up to our control. Of course, network has a say in it, and of course, the production company. We don't know exactly where we'll be going, but you know, what we do is we field a lot of. Information from different paranormal groups across the world, and you know, it's nice to have these sites like MySpace and stuff, and different paranormal community sites. LiveParanormal.com is a good one where you can really kind of cross-reference different groups and different experiences. And you know, people in the other, you know, GHI years, I think 20-something countries, so we are known globally, and people will seek us out, different groups, and say, you know, you guys check this place out next time you come out here. And so we kind of research that the best we can, and then the ones that we think have the most credibility, we'll forward along and see if anything comes out of it. We don't, like I said, we don't have complete control, but we do get to make some recommendations and stuff. So we'll see what comes of it next time out.
Now, when you first started investigating, were you pre-internet, or was the internet around when you started? I'm just wondering how you think, how's the internet affected paranormal investigating?
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, when I first started investigating when I was in high school, everything was just starting to come about with the internet. I mean, our computer classes were these really horrible programming classes courses with the old Commodore 64s. The only thing I liked to do on it was play the really horribly graphic racing game. I spent most of my time doing that. But the internet wasn't around at the time, so you really couldn't go on there and try to find local places to investigate, never mind exchange ideas or join a group or stuff like that. So it was all word of mouth, you know, and the history was whatever you could get from a local paper or from the library. So it's definitely changed the game, that's for sure. Now you can go on and see what other people have captured, listen to other things they've captured there. You can find out information about it. But, you know, like everything else, you got to be able to decide what you're reading and what you're accepting as fact and what you're going to weed out, because, you know, there's people that go on there for whatever reason and just write random BS and just kind of convolute things even more.
Yeah, it's I almost call them like paranormal hackers. They're about the same ones that sit around and write these stupid Trojans and computer viruses and just sit back and send them around and watch them screw everybody up, you know?
Yeah, I don't understand it. There seems to be something going on. I like to joke that maybe that evil slime from Ghostbusters 2 is real, because there seems to be people out there who just they enjoy making things tougher for everybody else. It's like, well, you don't really get anything out of it, so I don't understand exactly what it is you're trying to do. I don't know. I'm kind of an old school romantic that way, you know. I try to be very gentlemanlike. I like to hold open doors for people, say hello, wave people across the traffic. I actually get affronted sometimes when I let somebody go. They don't wave thank you. They just kind of stare at you. They just talking on their cell phone and eating their donuts, and they just drive by you. It's like, well, why the hell did I stop for you? You're not nice at all.
Exactly, you know, and it's like, how hard does it take to say thank you to someone, you know? I don't know, this the whole culture here is
even things like Twitter and MySpace and Facebook, like I'm not a big technology guy, you know. I'm definitely an old soul, because for somebody who's only 32, I shouldn't be so anti-technology, but I don't like all this stuff. I feel like everyone's fighting for that little 15 gigabytes of fame, and everybody wants their name and lights, and everybody wants to be so self-important. And I was like, you know, I have to maintain these sites, and I have to put up the Twitter thing and stuff, for business reasons and such. But I try to make sure I always make the effort to put up things to help others, you know, to remind people to donate blood, to sign up for bone marrow things, to pick up canned goods and stuff for the homeless shelters. And you know, there's a recent thing with in Wisconsin, a bunch of greyhounds. There's an old greyhound park, I think it's called Dairyland. And they're shut down. And there's, you know, there's a good number of dogs that are going to be euthanized unless people adopt them. Like, they're even looking for foster homes, just a place to put them. So I try to use what little reach I have, what little influence I have, and raise this awareness to people, so that maybe, you know, I can use this this technology and this influence for a little bit of good, and not just not for self-serving purposes, because that's not what I'm about.
Exactly. Yeah, I remember when you sent that message out on Facebook the other night. I immediately took it and re-forwarded it to everyone on my friends list so they could see it. And
That's great. Be interesting
to see how that comes. What comes of that?
Yeah.
Elfie says she'd love it if you'd visit China. And Chris wants to know if you have any trouble taking equipment through airports or customs. I was thinking that, too, if they wonder if you've got a bunch of bomb-making stuff there or what.
China is a place I would absolutely love to go. Obviously, it's just you know, the Orient's got some great, great history to it. The people of China, for a good deal, are very very superstitious about things. They have a lot of spiritual beliefs, a lot of respect for their passed-on elders and such. So it would be fantastic. I would love to see the Great Wall, something I'd always want to do. And So that would be a lot of fun. We'll see what comes of it, but it's definitely something that's on our list of places we'd like to go. And I'm sorry, what was the other question
there? Oh, they just Chris just wanted to know if you have any trouble taking equipment through airports or anything.
I usually don't carry much of the tech equipment with me. Our production company ships the majority of it. A bunch of us do have our own little EVP recorders and, you know, digital voice recorders and stuff that we'll take with us. Barry has a whole case with all his cameras and crazy stuff in it. But funny enough, the person who I see get harassed the most is Joe Chin. And he doesn't carry anything out of the ordinary, but for some reason, he always seems to get pulled aside, and they always take everything out right down to the liner. And he's just good clothes, but it happens to him pretty much every time. I've been searched a bunch of times too, and I always get some weird looks because I have like a bag of marshmallows, a couple of boxes of Pop-Tarts. But this is my comfort food. This is what I need to survive these long flights and to live out on the road. Cookie dough is fantastic to travel with too, but actually melts really fast. So you have to eat it usually on your first flight, or you're screwed.
Okay, I'm wondering with Joe if. A little bit of racial profiling going on there or something.
I don't know. I don't know what it is they're looking for on little Joe Chin, but they're always ripping through his bags or something.
Oh, man. Well, you know, they probably look at you, the rock star, and look at your cookie dough and say, you know,
yeah,
okay, whatever.
I'm not playing with the full deck, so they're just like, just let this guy go. It's not worth the time.
Well, it reminds me years ago, Howie Mandel, when he was traveling around, said he always used to get harassed at airports all the time because he'd go through the X-ray machine, and in his bags he'd have like a rubber chicken and a plastic crab and all this stuff, and it would go by the X-ray thing, and they'd always pull him aside and rip him out and said, hold up this plastic crab, and say, what's this for? And he says, it's for work. And they'd look at him and like, what the heck? Oh, man. All right, we got about 6 minutes left of the show here, so I definitely want to thank you for taking time out of your limited time with your family that you have and spending the evening here with us. It's been a real blast.
Well, thanks, man. It's my pleasure. I appreciate you having me on, and it's nice to be able to sit back and relax and talk about the things that matter in the field, and I appreciate you having me.
And it was great meeting you at the Holton Mansion, and had a pretty good crowd there, tromping through the dark. And
yeah, it was a good time.
Didn't catch much, but that building is certainly just the workmanship in that place is crazy, especially the temple. I like being in there. Let's see. We got another person just came in late here. Wanted to know how you felt getting leveled by the spirit in Lemp Castle, and said it freaked them out. I know you spoke about this earlier, but it didn't faze you much. Now, what did that feel like? I mean, did it just feel like somebody running into you?
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's interesting because it's hard to explain this depending where I am when I do the events and such, especially like the Midwest and the landlocked states. But for those of you who spent time in the ocean or even like a wave pool or something, it literally just felt like getting hit by a wave. And just something taking you off your feet. You know, it didn't really feel like a direct shot, like you're in a fight or anything like that. At the time, I didn't know what the hell to think about it. It was really crazy. There was no sensation of dread or any of that stuff that a lot of people think would be associated with it. There's really nothing emotionally upsetting about it. It's just very curious. It's very startling. That whole area was covered with little bales of hay and straw and stuff like that, except for the one place that I was standing with Dave, as luck would have it. So I fell on a bunch of cobblestone and rock. So it wasn't a pleasant landing. But like I said before, it is something that has caused me to think about the field in new ways. And, you know, so I'm actually thankful for it that it happened because I think it was important.
Okay. All of a sudden, I was starting to hear weird stuff here, so I don't know if it's me or you. I think it's me, probably, or Blog Talk. sounded like a demon come on the line there. But anyways, I definitely hope we can get you back on again sometime when you've got more free time. And you can let us know how your second book is coming along, and where you've been the next season of Ghost Hunters. And I just want to really say thank you to you for not letting it go to your head and being a normal guy and a great provider for your family and someone that we really look up to.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And it's very nice to be able to spend time with you and to talk with you, and really appreciate everybody tuning in to listen tonight. And I'll still be out there on the road keeping it real and doing what I do, and I appreciate everybody's support.
All right. We got about 3 minutes left in the show here. So you got any parting words you want to leave with anybody? Words of wisdom from your 32 years of keeping it real?
Things I live by, as I mentioned earlier, don't eat out of the ocean. Too many people have died, defecated, and urinated in it. It's not a good idea, especially sushi. You should never eat anything that's not cooked. It just doesn't seem to make much sense. Other things that I like to live by, something I've been quoting quite a bit lately up on Places, which is, life, a lot of lessons in life are kind of like oatmeal. They're kind of bland and not very exciting, but ultimately they can be good for you. So sometimes when things come your way and you're not so excited by them, just kind of take a step back, take a look at it, and see if it somehow makes sense for you. Maybe it can help you out somewhere down the road. And bottom line, something I've always lived my life by, don't take any shit from anybody. Always stick up for yourself, you know. Always make sure that you treat others with respect and that you're respected in return. And just try to live a good life and leave this whole place a little better than you found it.
Hey, can't beat that, that's for sure. That's even though I hate oatmeal, but it makes sense. So I can't top that, so.
All right. Very well, brother. Well, thanks again, man.
All right. I think we're gonna get out of here then. And I want to thank everyone for listening in and asking your questions. And we'll be back here next week, 7 p.m. every Sunday night. Hopefully Josh will be back. And I don't know who we're going to have for a guest, so it's going to be a surprise. All right, thank you, Dustin. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Prices are up, and everyone is feeling the pinch. A very rich man once said, "The problem is not that prices are too high. The problem is simply you need more money." So stop worrying about how to pay the bills and devote your time to making more money. Just go to CardsAreTheAnswer.com and find out how you can start earning more income right now. The Social Security Administration states that after working 40 years, only 5 out of 100 people will be financially secure. Make sure that you are one of those 5 by starting your own part-time home-based business today. Go to CardsAreTheAnswer.com right now and get the information you need to become more financially free. Never worry about high prices again. Simply make more money with your own home-based business. Visit CardsAreTheAnswer.com right now. That's CardsAreTheAnswer.com. Go now.
Sending a heartfelt message is one of the best ways to touch someone, to touch the heart. But it's easy to forget birthdays, anniversaries, and other special occasions. Imagine how many lives you would touch if it was easy to send those heartfelt messages. Send Out Cards provides a way for you to send a personalized greeting card to a friend, loved one, or business associate in less than 60 seconds from the convenience of your computer. You can even add a gift or gift card. Send Out Cards is about helping people reach out to those around them. It's amazing what a simple message can do. Send Out Cards helps you act on your promptings to reach out and change lives.